Now, adjust the volume control so that the sound can be heard in all parts of the room.
This is the Protect Your Assets podcast.
You get the idea? Bring me
a dream. It's on the internet. Make him the cutest
that I've ever seen. Go on. Give him two
lips. Like it's like no cheese I've ever tasted. And tell him
that his loss. Here's the Sandman. Over Sandman.
This past week, the stock market staged a healthy recovery as the market did several new things, which I'd like to review at this point. So I've got a couple questions this week. First, what's the technical situation of what just happened? And so that's a really good question. So let me answer that. The market has established what I'm going to call a technical near-term bottom. And the support right now is forming around 3820 on the S&P 500 to 3900. That's the range. I'll call that the support zone. And this is going to be critical in the weeks and months ahead as stocks attempt to establish a longer-term bottom. Looking more towards the short-term right now in the next few weeks, this past week there has been several favorable technical developments in the S&P 500 that I want to go over right now. First, we closed at a new six-week high for the first time since March. Second, we broke a key downtrend resistance line that sent the market to new year-to-date lows after the previous two tests. And third, we closed above the 50-day moving average for the first time since April. Now, what's important about this, too, is the volume during these latest moves has been pretty good. Now, it's not great, but it's not bad. And so if it had been lower volume, then I wouldn't be as, modestly optimistic. How's that? It's kind of like a lukewarm cup of coffee. Okay? That's how I feel. I'm just trying to give you some more info. But based on those three bullish technical developments I just covered, I think the technical short-term path of least resistance on the S&P 500 is higher to potentially 4,100 if you're looking for a number, okay? Now, in a longer term time frame, we're not out of the bear market woods just yet because the dominant trend in the broader market remains bearish given the subsequent and consistent set of lower lows and lower highs this year. From there, I'd want to see the S&P 500 test those two areas I talked about, call it 4,100, and stick through that through end of August. And again, if we see low volume on that uptrend, then again, be skeptical about it. What else am I looking for? Well, from a technical standpoint, again, I want to see the 50-day moving average start to rise. I want to see that get to 100-day and then 200-day moving average. And this is called a golden cross, a phenomenon where the typically preceding long-term bull market moves and we see more bullish activity in the stock market. And that's what I'm looking for. So to be clear right now, the dominant trend in the broader equity market is bearish overall, and there are lots of reasons to remain cautious. And that brings me to the three keys to where we want to see a bottom actually form. So the key first, you may remember we talked about this back in early May. I identified three events that need to happen before I can definitively call a bottom for stocks. And the first was the Chinese lockdowns ease and growth recovers. And as you know, right now, this past week didn't really help with the Chinese economy reopening, but not to the extent we'd like to see, particularly with the Macau situation that happened and the zero COVID policy that's still in effect. The PMI number over there was pretty healthy overall, which shows that the economic growth is sustainable. But bottom line, lockdowns have eased. They need to ease more. And the threat of new lockdowns are still out there. And the Chinese economy is not close to being typical, which is one of the things I need to see for my key to a bottom. Second key to a bottom is inflation has to peak. I don't think anybody's going to argue that it hasn't happened yet. The June CPI was above 9%. We're still seeing evidence of the economy still being somewhat overheated. So we need to see a peak in inflation and a peak in Fed hawkishness, which next week's going to be a big week because Wednesday we'll get more information out of the Fed. I'm expecting a 1% raise. I'll call it this morning, but another 1 point I know some people are saying 75 basis points, but I see 1%. And I believe it's already priced in the market as well. So, you know, don't think that just because now they're raising rates that there's going to be more destruction in the price value of your bonds. I don't see that. I think it's already been reflected. Third key is the geopolitical tensions. As you know, Italy this week, we had the that was historic, right? Dark eye just says, I'm done. See ya. Walks out. Interesting, right? So anyway, there's still a lot of geopolitical tensions around the world, certainly with what's going on in Ukraine and so forth, and now in Italy. And so we got to see oil and natural gas start to get under control. Commodity prices are starting to come down, but they're still elevated, and we need them to get back to where they were before the invasion occurred. I'll call it pre-invasion levels, and we need to see that in order for us to have tapped that third key, I'll call it, to reaching a bottom. Now, another question I got this week, which was really good, is value done? What does that mean? Well, you know, we've been talking about value for a while. Value has massively outperformed growth in 2022 on a year-to-date basis. What do I mean? The index for value is a symbol VTV. It's down just about 9%, while the symbol for growth, VUG, is down almost 27%. That's a big deal. So since early May, growth has started to outperform value. And this past week, we saw that again, particularly in the technology sector. And the question is it over? Is it over for value? Is it time to rotate back into growth on a go-forward basis? So good question. Let me answer that. I want to examine why growth was less favored than value starting about a year ago. I was talking about overweighting value mid to late 21, you may remember if you've been listening to the show for a while. And that strategy was based on three factors. First, rates were going to rise. In Q4 21, the 10-year yield was about 1.5%, despite the fact inflation was starting to surge. We had extremely strong economic growth, and we had a Fed that was about to hike rates. It was reasonable to assume at that time rates were going to rise, and that would hurt growth stocks and favor value and cyclicals. Again, nothing new. You've been hearing me talk about that for a while. Second, growth and technology were just frankly overvalued. If you go back and look at the PE, the forward PE on growth stocks, it reached 30 times earnings in late 21. This was historically high. So as rates rose, the market was likely going to punish those expensive stocks. And instead, we wanted to be in value that had just frankly lower PE ratios for protection. Third, growth and inflation were strong. Then an event which no one saw coming, the war in Ukraine, supercharged that trend as inflation exploded, driving commodity prices higher. What that did is it sent yields even higher and helped in the massive outperformance of value in 2022. So looking forward, the factors that led value outperforming are, I think, starting to change, as I just talked about a minute ago. And what we're going to see, I think, first, are rates are going to start to move a little bit higher, but the majority of the move, I think, is over. The 10-year yield has exploded from 1.5%, got as high as 3.5%, and now it's coming back down slightly. Economic growth is losing momentum. Inflation is possibly peaking, but not going away quickly. And the case can be made that while yields are still going to rise, the vast majority of that move higher is behind us. And if that's the case, then the stable to falling yield is going to be a good move and less of a headwind on growth like it has been in technology. So that's the first thing. Second, values have changed. Like I said, in late 21, growth was trading at 30 times forward earnings. Now, after literally a collapse in tech stocks, the forward PE on growth has declined to about just below 20 times earnings. Growth has become cheaper compared to value. And bottom line, the overvaluation that left growth and tech stocks vulnerable to these year-to-date declines, I think, has corrected itself. So the U.S. economy is losing momentum. I've called this a couple of weeks ago. I said we're in a recession. I still believe we are. Many signals I look at show that the U.S. economy is losing momentum, and the chances of an economic stall or contraction are very high. The 10-2s, the 10-year treasury versus the 2-year yield spread, has inverted. It stayed there, which again, we were saying that had to be that case for me to get to make this call, which again, I'm saying it's here. And financial conditions are starting to tighten because corporate commentary has turned more cautious. We're seeing that across the board as companies are announcing. You saw Ford this week announce 8,000 layoffs, right? So this is what's happening. Global economy is facing headwinds. We've got the Chinese lockdowns I talked about. We got the EU energy problems. We got geopolitics happening all around the world. And so a slowing economic environment, yields should decline or I think at least remain stable. And so money probably should rotate back into some of the super cap tech stocks like Apple, Microsoft, Intel, Google. And if you look at some of the heaviest weighted growth ETFs, you'll see those are pretty much predominant positions in them. So while they are growth, they also have defensive properties for people looking for free cash flow generating machines. And I think that's the important distinction I want to make this morning as we think about equities. Free cash flow generating tech stalwarts, such as the ones I just talked about, are different than high revenue, no profit tech companies that defined the tech boom of late 21, like cloud names, self-driving cars. Those are still things you want to avoid overall. So bottom line, I'm not advocating for a wholesale rotation from value to growth, but if I were allocating new capital in the market right now, well, I think about making growth an overweight in those allocations instead of value. And if I looked at my portfolio and I saw that I was materially underweight growth, well, I'd begin to correct that so growth and value come more into balance. And again, we're still looking for those three signals. So if the market's going to rally, it'll rally because the hopes of peak inflation and peak hawkishness are a reality. But we're going to need to see all three of those things I mentioned earlier to make it a lasting bull market once again. So I hope that was helpful. Thank you for the questions. And let's move on.
Investment advisory services are offered through Liberty Wealth Management, a registered investment advisor. This podcast is for informational purposes only and should not be relied upon as a basis for investment decisions. The strategies mentioned are not suitable for everyone. The information expressed does not consider your specific situation or objectives and may not be appropriate for all investors. Past performance is not indicative of future results. To better understand the risk associated with investing and how it reacts to different market conditions, listeners should always consult with their qualified investment professionals, financial advisors, legal or tax specialists, and conduct their due diligence before making any financial decisions or taking any action. The legal information provided on the air is not intended to substitute for callers hiring their lawyers to advise them about personal legal matters. Investments involve risk and, unless otherwise stated, are not guaranteed. Liberty Group LLC paid for the following program, and the host's views and opinions do not represent those of the station or its ownership. California Life Agent number 048569. KNBR and Liberty are not affiliated. Persons engaging the services of one affiliate of Liberty Group LLC companies should be aware that each company is operated separately. You're listening to the Protect Your Assets Radio Network.